Well, I'm Wendy Shea from the Archive Center at the National Museum of American History, and I'm in an impossible situation because I'm following Don, and I'm going before Rick, which is like opening for Elvis. So bear with me. I know, but you're not. And the other thing I wanted to say is Margie and Bill O'Farrell and Rick, can you believe that from Margie organizing Industrial Revolution in 1998, we've turned into this. That's great. Any rate, I get, like I say, the great spot here. And what's more, I get the great topic. Industrial films and multi-format collections. What a dull and uncreative title for a presentation. Plus, it flouts convention of academic presentation. There's not a colon or semi or otherwise. So to make up for this deficiency in the title, I'm going to start this short, we hope, presentation with a selection from one of the films included in the guide, Behind the Cup. Unfortunately, I didn't plan on Don having such a good thing to go with first, but anyway, I think you'll enjoy this. So let's watch it carefully, and there will be a quiz. It's about 5 minutes of the film. On half-inch VHS, from half-inch VHS, because my organization's incredibly poor.
When from our blankets we arrive at dawn, with woozy brain and sleep in our eyes beyond, we grow and flare like grizzly bears at dawn we yawn and swear. Our nerves are so unsteady, we bite and fight. But when the coffee's ready, we're quite all right. We sniff one whiff and all our guards are stayed away. We say, hooray, hooray. When the coffee's on, all our grounding's done. We're happy, we're merry, we're human. When the first cup's gone, why it makes each one seem a good man, a true man, a new man. We may rise with the temper when early breaks the day, but the flavor of the Java drives our cares away. So pass your cup and fill it up and tilt it up and ring it. Let the tin cups clink to the world's best drink, our
coffee is America's favorite beverage. The United States alone consumes nearly 60 billion cups a year and is the world's largest customer. Have you ever wondered where coffee comes from or what happens to coffee before it reaches your cup? Join us in a hurried trip to Coffee Land. Let us show you what goes on behind the cup and tell you the story of Hills Brothers Coffee. Tisco, looking down on the Hills Brothers Coffee plant from the San Francisco Oakland Bay Bridge. To this counter in Hills Brothers Coffee Testing Department come the representatives of almost every coffee producing country. Bearing samples that have been rushed to San Francisco by air mail, these men bring their offerings, the choicest of the world's crops. No coffee is purchased until it has undergone a cup test to determine its quality, so samples must be left for careful consideration. A portion of each sample has to be roasted in miniature roasters before testing. The first step is to mark the trays, then divide each sample, part for roasting, part to be kept green for later comparison. These gas-heated sample roasters take about half a pound at a time. An expert operator can handle several at once. Note how carefully he has to watch the roast develop, so it will be pulled at just the right moment and not allow the coffee to become overdone. When the roast is off, the coffee is quickly cooled by a blast of air that comes from underneath the machine, and the beans are flipped to remove the chaff that flakes out from the application of heat. After the trays of roasted coffee samples are again lined up with their corresponding green samples on the counter, the trays of roasted beans have to be ground, and then they are ready to be prepared for testing. First, a portion of each sample is accurately weighed into one of the heavy glasses in which cup testing is done. Accuracy is important to assure an even comparison between the various coffees. The next step is to fill each glass nearly to the brim with boiling water. Then stir the mixture and allow the coffee to steep. After the samples have steeped sufficiently, the testing glasses are cool enough so that the coffee testers can go to work. Coffee testing is the work of a lifetime. It cannot be learned in a few weeks or even a few months, but requires long years of patient study before a coffee tester reaches a point where his judgment can be thoroughly relied on. The work of the coffee tester is an interesting part of the coffee business, and believe me, a truly important part. No one has yet been able to apply any form of yardstick to the coffee bean. The valuation of coffee quality defies all known chemical or scientific tests, and the varying qualities can only be determined by man's sense of taste and smell. Do coffee testers ever drink coffee? Yes, indeed. But they save that pleasure for the privacy of their own homes.
We could stop it now in the interest of time.
Here, they only taste
it. If you want.
Hills Brothers are very particular about the coffees that go into their...
Okay, great. Any rate, so, what can we see? What do we know about this film just from watching it? You've only seen less than 5 minutes now of a nearly 40-minute film. What do we know? Well, we get the credit information, shot by Ken Allen in Cinecolor, with T. Carol Wilson of Hills Brothers as the narrator. We see that it was copyrighted by Hills Brothers in 1939. We know that the musical intro was written and sung specifically for the film. What can we learn from the images? Well, I'm not going to go through all that because Don just did that kind of thing for you, but you can do your basic deconstruction, unpacking, and looking for tropes. So you understand that. But, and this is the point I'm here to make, these films did not spring, you know, fully born from the head of Zeus and with no relationship to anything. Happily for us, the Hills Brothers film, this film, Behind the Cup, came to us as part of an incredibly large collection, the Hills Brothers Coffee Collection. It's very varied. It's got, there's 5 document boxes of papers, photos, and other things related to the making of the film. But the collection also includes audio materials, coffee cans, you name it, it came with the collection. Happily, because of the material, I am so lost here, it's like, give it up. Because of the material, we know quite a bit now about the making of this film and Hills Brothers' participation in the 1939 Pan-Pacific Exhibition and the Golden Gate International Exposition the following year. There are documents about everything from the decision to get involved with the project to companies offering their services to architectural drawings and artist renderings of the Hills Brothers Theater to job applications of potential employees. In addition, it becomes clear that Behind the Cup was an in-house production filmed by Ken Allen, a Hills Brothers employee, scripted and narrated by Carol Wilson, also of Hills Brothers, with approval and notes on the scripts by the Hills Brothers who ran the company themselves. Because of this complete record, we know how many people saw the film in relation to the proportion of total fairgoers, and we know what the viewers thought of the film, which is one of the things that was brought up yesterday is a weakness in these kinds of films. You don't know how they affected the people who saw them. Well, we know that about this film. We also know that Ken Allen and Hills Brothers shot scenes around the fair, wrote the script, and edited the film that became Farewell to Treasure Island, which is available on the archive.org website. As an interesting aside, Hills Brothers also contributed a significant portion of the footage used in Bridging the Bay, another film that I think is going to end up in the guide, right? Because in-house photographer-filmmaker Ken Allen documented the construction process from the first day, filming and photographing from the Hills Brothers building every single day. So U.S. Steel actually went to Hills Brothers to get the footage when they made that film. So anyway, I'm going to give you a taste of the riches. First of all, I thought, and I hope this doesn't bore you too much, but I think it's kind of cool. For example, this is a letter that Carol Wilson wrote to Ken Allen while he was in El Salvador. I had a talk with H.G. Hills yesterday. He was the big guy. And he feels pretty definitely that we should take out scenes of the children sitting on the sidewalk and the boy eating tortillas. In some ways, I'm sorry to see those little touches dropped out, but it won't hurt the story at all, so we'd better go ahead and do it without any further conversation. So you see that even the president of the company was involved with the production of this. Then there was the issue of who would narrate the film, and they were trying to get somebody in the business. And so they had communication with NW Air, which was the advertising agency Hill's Brothers had at the time, and we actually have the NW Air collection as well. Anyway, the describing the person they wanted. He has done work on industrial films for Van Camp, Seafoods, Union Oil, Weyerhaeuser, and does the unusual occupation shorts for Paramount. He has no records available of his voice. This should not prove a handicap, however, as he can be heard on the air several nights each week. I guess they didn't make that deal because T. Carol Wilson ended up narrating. And here's a letter from a fairgoer who had the thrill of seeing the movie. This is the kind of feedback that we have in this collection. Let's see. This one I'll do. This week I had the pleasure of seeing and smelling the Hills Brothers movie at the exposition. Yum! You've really got something there. If that aroma doesn't make everyone in the audience long for a cupful, then their proboscises are not in working order. Can't help but comment that the whole thing is a delight, clear, concise, understandable, both as to your explanation and the pictures themselves. The only possible improvement would be serving a cup of the real thing as we file out. I've used Hills Brothers coffee since, well, let's skip that. It's too long for any woman to admit. And I still sniff the freshly opened can with the same genuine delight in its fragrant goodness as years ago. More power to Hills Brothers and to you, Mr. Wilson. So there's hundreds of letters like that. Now we're going to try to show a little bit of other stuff if you're not too bored yet. And the time's not, I have two more minutes or something, right? This is my first time trying to do a PowerPoint. I probably can't even get the damn thing open. How come it won't start? Okay. There, Hills Brothers, right there. Where's that mouse? Okay, don't tell my 14-year-old what trouble I just had. Okay. So can we have that? It's...
Do I need to hit F7? All right, they're switching.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So here you see the artwork for the brochure that was given out. I'm going to go through it very quickly, as long as I can find out how to do this.
What year was it made?
1939. Okay, here's a letter about getting into the exposition, whether they were interested in participating. Here is the bill for the theater chairs they ordered for the Hills Brother Theater, and they didn't spare any expense. They apparently were very comfortable chairs. Many of the letters noted that. This is one of my personal favorites. This is an application from someone who is at Hills Brothers service to help them out at the fair. She claims to be 26. And there are many, many resumes and other job applications in the collection. So artist rendering, or a photograph, I can't remember of it.
Never mind, figure it out.
Photograph of the Hills Brothers Theater. A whole collection of how they contacted the press and what they had to say. The communication with CineCaller, who did the work. I really like this because every piece of stationery has a frame of film. And it's different picture. It's different images for every single letter. Here's very interesting because they have this for every single week of the fair being open. The number of people attended, the number of people who saw the Hills Brothers things, you know, whether it was rainy or cloudy, because that influenced how many people came to the fair that day, and then so what proportion of the people came. So just they were really tracking this, and this was being done entirely within Hills Brothers. And the other interesting thing is this is from the NW Air Agency collection. They picked up in their advertising from the film. So there was what they call today synergy. Yes. there's a script for Farewell to Treasure Island, which was done towards the end of the 1940 fair to try to get people in. And then, you know, while they were drinking the coffee at one place, a real family picture, this was going on somewhere else in the fair. This is from our Zim World's Fair collection. Anyway, you can turn that off now. I hope I didn't offend anybody. But, you know, again, I was in a bad position. I had to, you know, show a little something. Okay, the value of looking behind the film. The films that are the topic of the field guide are wonderful documents capturing the zeitgeist of specific times as filtered through the lens of the sponsoring industries and institutions. Yep. The films stand on their own, and you saw that, but as this... At the same time, they can be highly entertaining, often in ways unintended and unanticipated by their creators. But as I hope I demonstrated, these films are part of a much bigger story. And as Rick will show, he knows quite a bit about the companies that made them. But many of these companies who were involved with industrial films did their own filmmaking. Goya Films had an in-house unit. Krispy Kreme had an in-house unit. United Shoe Machinery Corporation, Tupperware, Carvel Ice Cream. They all were also engaged in producing industrial films, but they were doing it from within. And the other thing is that even if they didn't have an in-house unit, if you find the film, if you can find the records of the organization that sponsored it or the industry, there's so much to the story there. It often just fits in all sorts of interesting ways and synergies. So that's not all what I wrote. Rick.